0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Robert is in County Wicklow. Robert, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
It's a difficult call for you to make, Robert, but it's there is an air of desperation. Can you tell us, we know there's shortages of medications, and we've heard the list between various antibiotics, even cough bottles, etc. But the medication you need is pretty specific, but there is a shortage.
Yes, it's Antabus.
Okay.
It's a drug that basically makes you get sick if you drink alcohol.
Okay.
So basically, you take two tablets a week, which keeps you safe from drinking alcohol for at least about 10 days or so.
Okay, and do the tablets have any effect on you when you take them?
No, none at all. Okay. I've taken them before, and it's like taking a Smartie. There's no effect at all. Like.
And then if you do, God forbid, take a drink?
I never have.
Brilliant.
So that's why I'm desperate to get them, because I'm an alcoholic, and I go to meetings, but I just want to get 3 to 6 months sobriety behind me, taking Antabus, going to meetings, and just guarantee. The thing about it is, I've taken them before when I lived in Sweden, and they kept me safe for the period of time that I took them.
Okay.
I was never stupid enough to drink on them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And it is an addiction. It's very, very tough. But
yeah.
How many tablets have you got left?
I have none.
Oh God!
I've been trying. I went to my GP, and he's a great doctor in Westmount Clinic in Wicklow Town.
Yeah.
And he prescribed them for me because he knows my problem. I've been there numerous occasions over the last 2 years since I returned from Sweden, and he's prescribed them for me, and we tried the first pharmacy in Rathdrum. They didn't have any. Then we tried Wicklow Town. They didn't have any. And then the pharmacy in Wicklow Town, one pharmacy said they had them. I turned up there 2 weeks ago, and there was some mistake they'd made that they actually didn't have them in stock. And then they started to ring around every pharmacy in Wicklow Town, and it turned out that no pharmacy in Wicklow Town has any. I've tried Bray. I've tried South Dublin. I've just been on the phone and on the phone. I approached the HSE, Drug and Alcohol Helpline, and they emailed me yesterday morning saying that you must keep trying different pharmacies and there's a shortage. They basically told me what they already knew, so that they couldn't help in any way, you know.
But they do accept, because I think I was reading a statement yesterday from they do accept that there is a shortage.
Yeah, absolutely. The suppliers can't get them. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It seems to be that I think there's three suppliers to all the pharmacies in Ireland, and none of the three have them in stock. And as far as I know, they haven't had them in stock since before Christmas.
Wow.
And so, I mean, there must be thousands of people like me out there that have been using these to help them, you know.
And they do help. You're adamant about that, because it's like, what happens if you do slip?
If I slip,
If I have
a relapse, you mean?
Yeah.
If I have a relapse, which has happened, I mean, I'm only 8 days sober now.
Okay.
I had my first sober St. Patrick's weekend in my entire life.
Great.
Which hopefully isn't my last. It wasn't a pleasant St. Patrick's weekend because I was in withdrawals.
Okay.
And I was silly. I should have went to the hospital. I should in St. Patrick's Day, I should have been sitting in the hospital getting detoxed properly. But I decided to do it myself because of the last time I was in hospital in January. I went in there, and because of it was just after Christmas, so you probably remember in early January with the COVID and everything was back and the hospitals were full.
Right.
So they kept me in for, I think I was only in there for about 9 hours, and they let me out at 3 a.m. and I'm standing in the middle of Dublin with no way back home to Wicklow and no money in my pocket. And it was just hell, like, and I eventually I persuaded them to pay for a taxi for me home. And actually they got me home in the end. But after that, I just kind of said, I'm not going to hospital to detox because they don't want me there. You know, they don't want an alcoholic there. They want,
And how did you spend St. Patrick's Day?
Drinking water and shaking. And
could you take anything to help you?
Unfortunately, I didn't go to the doctor either. There is things to help you. Librium, it's a benzodiazepam. If you take them, it stops the shaking. It helps a lot. It's the safest way. Normally, if you go to the hospital or go to your doctor, he'll prescribe you Librium to come gently off alcohol. It's a safe way, so you don't have I've had four seizures in my life that I know about. I mean, I may have had many more because I don't remember having seizures, but the reason I know that these four happened is on one occasion I fractured a vertebrae in my spine. Another occasion I fractured two vertebrae in my spine. Another occasion I ended up with over 30 stitches in my forehead, where my father seeing me smashing my head, having a fit and smashing my head into a pint glass on the ground. And then another occasion, I did some more damage to my back, but that turned out to be okay because I've been up to Vincent's and got it checked out. So, yeah. And another occasion was in Stockholm where my friend found me having a fit on the floor in the apartment.
Yeah. And Robert, you have a prescription for antabuse.
I have a prescription. Yeah.
So you can basically fulfill it anywhere.
Exactly. It's a case of I had sent it to the place in Rathdrum. They didn't have it, so then I contacted the West End Clinic and they transferred it to the place that said that they had them.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have them, so now it's just to try. If there's anyone, any pharmacist listening out there anywhere in the country, maybe they can contact your show because it's literally, Joe, I'm prescribed two every week, but when I took them before, I would take one on a Friday morning, and that would do me for the whole week because it's always the weekend is my dodgy period. Yeah, during the week when I'm working, everything is fine. I don't even think about it. It's just when a Friday night happens.
That's
when it all kicks off. And if I start drinking a Friday night, I might be still drinking 3 weeks later and lose my job. You know.
And when did you last take an antabuse tablet?
It would have been early 2020.
In the last recent days.
No, I haven't. I haven't had them since I came home. I've only been prescribed them about 7 weeks ago. I went to my doctor and said, I haven't got the power to do this.
Yeah.
I literally haven't got, like, people go to meetings. I go to meetings, but I haven't got the power at the moment to just go to meetings. I need this as a backup. It's just kind of a backup that I can go to meetings. But at the end of the day, if I leave a meeting and I want to drink, I won't be able to drink because I know I'll have taken an antabus tablet.
But you haven't got any in the last few weeks.
No, you haven't got any at all.
So that's why you're doing. You're going cold turkey. To use basically, that awful phrase.
Basically.
And when do you go to meetings, Robert? Can I ask?
I do. I'm going to one tonight in Bray. The CA meeting is Cocaine Anonymous.
Okay.
Not saying my problem is so much cocaine; it's more alcohol, but. In the meetings, like whether it be NA, CA or AA, you know, it's all the same principles, the 12-step program. Yeah. So,
and because the meetings are confidential, highly, and it's a brilliant organization. Would you go to a CA meeting before an AA meeting? Do you follow me?
I would. I'll tell you why, not mentioning any names I've been to AA meetings and they're great. It's just, I'll tell you what it is, I'm 44 years old.
Okay.
And if I go to an AA meeting and I see a lot of people in AA meetings, could be, we'll say, in their 70s, you know, and they could be 30 years, 40 years sober, and fair play to them. But I... if I go to a CA meeting, I'm around people generally my age or a little bit younger, and I can connect more to them.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah. That's
I just find, yeah. I find it easier to connect to them, and that's basically the only reason. Like what we talk about in the meetings is generally the same in AA to CA, but it's just the age difference. I think
that's interesting.
Yeah.
And have you got a sponsor?
Not yet, but I have a man in mind.
Okay. Because I'm just watching. I don't know whether you've seen it. This new Nancy Harris drama on RT. It's up on the RT Play. It's fantastic.
No, I've heard about it.
Yeah, The Dry.
Yeah.
She's on The Dry. It's brilliantly written. Yeah. And it's actually been nominated for a BAFTA, which is fantastic, for the writer, Nancy Harris. But,
I must check it out.
But again, it's a reminder of how drink is everywhere in Ireland. Now, I'm sure it's the same. Is it tougher in Ireland than it was in Sweden? Or is it all in yourself, Robert?
I tell you, because I spent so long in Sweden, I ended up making, I think, most of my friends there, you know, in the last 10, 12 years.
Okay.
And I came home 2 years ago, and a lot of my friends at home now are married with kids or whatever like that. So they have their own lives, you know. So whereas in Sweden, I was hanging out with my group of friends, and I think it was easier for me there than here. Now, don't get me wrong, I ran into trouble over there with alcoholism. I actually ended up in a homeless hostel in Stockholm at one stage, you know, due to alcoholism. So it's not been all hunky dory over there either. Yeah. Like, okay. You know, the biggest thing for me is I've been sitting. It's now we're heading for April, and I started to apply to get into a rehabilitation clinic in High Park in Drumcondra in December, and I'm still sitting here waiting to get a place. And I've given up now, Joe. That's why 7 weeks ago I went to my doctor and said I want to get Antabus because I need to go back to work. I can't sit around any longer and wait to get into rehab. You know, my addiction counselor in Bray, she said to me that I think it's a good idea for you to take time off and just focus on yourself. But that has been an absolute disaster because with me having all this time off, I've been relapsing after relapse. I just need to get Antabus and get back to work and continue with the meetings. It's the safest thing for me.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm just wondering, when you go to the how much supply would a doctor, do you know, give out of Antabus generally?
Generally a month at a time. Now, it's not that I would have to go back to my doctor every month. I would just send an email on their website or a mail on their website and ask for a renewal of the prescription. So it's generally just a month at a time. I mean, if I asked him for more, he probably would have written me more. I just asked him for a prescription, and I only found out when I went to the pharmacist that he'd written a 1 month prescription, which was I think it was how many tablets, 2 a week. So okay. Yeah. 8 tablets, 10 tablets.
Okay, we've established some links for you, which we'll talk to you confidentially after the program. That's okay.
Yeah, but
there is some supply, and fingers crossed now. And that I presume you have the prescription. Your doctor prescribed it, and with your permission, we put those people and organisations have contacted us, but they say they have some Antabus. But there is a general recognition that there is an awful shortage. Kevin O'Rourke, Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. Did you take these tablets?
I did. Yeah. And what I wanted to say to Robert, and God love him, if you can manage without them. Manage without them, because they are the most dangerous thing. Now, they're not illegal, and they are given out by doctors, and they don't reduce the desire to drink, but what they do is they make you extremely sick if you drink on them.
Yeah.
And when I mean extremely sick, I mean you're on death's door.
Good
and
God.
The first thing that will be that you will be told is that you must present to an A&E clinic if you drink on these tablets. They are extremely dangerous, and I would implore, now I know it's extremely difficult, Robert, if he can manage without them, manage without them.
The thing is, I am aware of that. In Sweden, I had to sign a declaration with the doctor saying that I am, it's possible I die if I drink alcohol on these.
I am aware
of the danger of them, but that's the thing. I have taken them before for, I think, 4.5 months in Sweden. I took them, and I was, as I said to Joe, I was never silly enough to go near alcohol.
Yeah.
And when I decided to drink again, because I did decide to drink again, I took 2 weeks. I stopped taking them, and 2 weeks later, because I knew a party was coming up, and I made sure that it was all out of my system, so I stopped taking them 2 weeks before the party. So I'm not, I really am not going to be one of these people who are, you know, that alcohol has me. It has me, you know, but I'm not going to be, I am very aware of the danger.
I'm not suggesting you're stupid about these things, but but I was the same as you. I stopped taking them with the intention of going back on drink, and I gave myself, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 days before I went. I found that even the smallest amount in your system, and I got extremely, extremely ill. And to be honest with you, I swore I'd never take them again. Now, I did go into rehab, and I've never taken them again, but I did get very sick with my pancreatitis, and I haven't drank in 2.5 years. Now, I have to say it's my pancreatitis dictates whether I drink or not, and I choose not to drink, because if that gets sick again, I'm really in big trouble. I have to stay off it. So I'm in a little bit of a better position than you, insofar as that I can say, well, anti-booze is of no great. My pancreatitis takes preference over the anti-booze, but I know where you're coming from. My only point when I was ringing Joe was to say, and I know you're not a stupid man,
okay, well said,
is that how sick it makes you. And you want to be 110%, and you know yourself, you need to be 200% sure that you're never going to drink again if you take these tablets. And I've been in rehab, and I've actually said it in rehab, if you have any intention of drinking again, do not take them. It's a pity now for you that they're not available in chemists. I'm sure listening out, there's loads of chemists. There must be somebody has them. I'm actually looking through my drawer to see if I've any from a previous life, and I can't find any, but I think they'd be out of date in any case. And
but
if I had them, I'd give them to
you. I understood, maybe Robert will help me here. I understood if you took antabuse and you did take a drink, you just vomit.
No, I think
it can be a lot worse than that.
Oh, good
you know, like as I said, oh, I had to find.
You go red from your toes right up to the top of your forehead. You'll feel sick and you'll get a migraine, but your heart will feel that it's actually hitting the wall 8 yards away. It's absolutely lethal. I've only heard of one person who could drink on anti-booze, and that was a lady that I knew that was in recovery. And I don't know. But I think if you go back, you'll find that George Best, I shouldn't be using names, but these people actually got it implanted in their tummies to stop them drinking. But they just had such a passion to drink, they drank on them, and it made them hugely sick.
Yeah.
It's lethal.
No, the thing about antabus is I as I'm only 8 days in sobriety, the only thing I want antabus for is 3 to 6 months to get, and I'm not looking at antabus as a long term solution.
Yeah.
I'm looking at to give myself some sobriety to guarantee the next 3 to 4 months that I'm sober, and then I intend on stop taking them and just continue, because if I get 3 to 4 months sobriety behind me, I should be in a position to stop taking them.
And the other thing as well, Robert, as you know, and Kevin pinpoint as well, you are sharp and bright about this, that your doctor, you're in touch with your doctor on a regular basis. So fingers crossed, as I say, there are some offers, so we won't mention them on air, but we'll supply them to you in terms of information after the program. Kevin, stay well. Kevin, look after yourself.
Thanks very much, Joe. Thank you, and Robert, good luck in your recovery.
Yeah, well done.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Robert. Thanks, Kevin.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Orla, good afternoon. Orla Murphy. Orla, I mentioned to Robert that his call must have been difficult to make to Liveline. Yeah. Your call is difficult as well because...
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us, and you have, obviously, you're speaking with the permission of Fia's parents.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for taking our call, Joe. So basically, I'm speaking on behalf of Laura and Rory, who are my little niece's parents. Laura's my one sister. And what's happening at the moment is poor Fia is 4 years old.
Yeah.
She's been diagnosed with metastatic stage 4 neuroblastoma.
Okay.
This is a relapse. She has fought this cancer twice to almost completion.
Yeah.
And on this time, we've been told that there is very little medical treatment that is on offer. She has had surgery in the past few months, and we have now reached the stage that on Wednesday we were told that she will be for palliative care.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the hurdle that we are now facing is that that in the same conversation has been told that Fia is going to receive no more curative treatment. We were told that in the southeast where Fia lives, there is actually no pediatric palliative care cover.
And what you mean is it is at home. It's home palliative care.
Home palliative care. So in every other region except for the southeast, it is appropriate for a child to go home with the support of community palliative care, their own GP, and a local pediatrician to die at home in peacefully and with their family. Unfortunately, in the southeast, and it has been highlighted by the palliative care team in the southeast since 2018, that this is an issue and that they do not feel sufficiently trained and they don't have a proper system of governance to actually provide pediatric palliative care at home. And since 2018, there have been multiple children that have not had the right to pass away at home.
And just can you tell us the difference for the family that the family think home palliative care would make, though I know it's a lot of it's self-evident?
It would make a huge difference to Fia's, what is left of Fia's life. She hasn't been afforded the same opportunity as the rest of us who are actually able to listen to this show. So she's only 4 years old. Yeah. Her fifth birthday is in April. And the only place at that age of life that any child wants to be is within their kitchen, their playroom, and their own bedroom.
And
she has a beautiful brother called Paddy, and Paddy is the world of comfort to her. And unfortunately, it was decided almost a year ago, because Paddy never actually acclimatized to the hospital environment because of COVID. So, and when he would go into the hospital, he wouldn't be calm, he wouldn't be relaxed, he wouldn't be able to play, and they would both get quite unnerved by being in the hospital together. So to allow Fia to actually pass away with her brother and her mother and father peacefully, we feel like the only appropriate thing for any child would be to be at home.
Well, that's interesting, the fact that obviously people think Fia is only four, for her to be in a hospital in these circumstances is difficult, but also the fact that her brother, he finds it difficult. He has found it going into a hospital, and he almost, whereas at home, the environment, as you're right, is completely different.
Completely different, and he provides so much comfort at home. They share their stories between each other. Fia shows him her scars, which she wouldn't even show us in the hospital because she was guarding her sore tummy, and Paddy would show him the scratch on his, or show Fia the scratch on his leg. Because, and then they go off and run off and have fun. You know, that's the important thing, that she needs to be preserved in this next few months.
Well, I know before I came down to studio, I know the team upstairs were talking to the HSE, and it would seem to be moving in a positive direction even at that stage. But let's kind of bring in Lisa Norris. Lisa, good afternoon.
Of course. Hi, Joe. How are you?
And more importantly, how are you? Because it's only in December that Danny passed away. And again, you're in Waterford, or is in Wexford. Did you have to campaign for home palliative care for Danny as well?
Unfortunately so, Joe. I suppose Danny suffered from the same illness as Fia. He was diagnosed in June 2020 with stage 4 neuroblastoma. And it became clear to us, I suppose, last summer that unfortunately Danny was terminally ill. We had been linking him with palliative care in Crumlin since, I would say, around February time. That was for symptom management. But I suppose we had travelled abroad for treatment.
Yeah.
That wasn't feasible. So when we came back, we expressed a wish that, you know, it was always Danny's preference to be at home, not to be in a hospital.
Yeah.
So much so, like, that we would travel up and down to Dublin for his chemo, for his radiotherapy. We would do it daily from Waterford as far as possible.
So you'd spend as little time as possible in the hospital environment and as much time as possible in his home environment.
Absolutely. And I suppose from the initial conversation, we made it very clear that it was our express wish and Danny's that he would be at home. And it became very clear very quickly that because of the geography of where we lived, that this wasn't going to be an option and that we would have a fight in our hands because that we live in the southeast region.
And it's no
palliative, no home palliative care has been provided for children in the region since 2017.
Yeah. And but your campaign did get somewhere, thankfully, before
Danny. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, we were very lucky. We had the full support of Danny's team in Crumlin. We had the full support of the paediatric team in South Tip, in the Tipperary University Hospital, and also our GP, Dr. Brian Marcy in Clonmel.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to, with the support of our local representatives, I suppose, Matty McGrath, Michael Lowry, also were very helpful.
Okay, very good.
And a package, but it was a bespoke package, and I suppose it's so disheartening and upsetting to hear that now Laura and Rory and Paddy and Fia are in this position 4 months on and nothing has been put in place.
I've just handed, that's a one-line HSE response, a comprehensive package of care has been finalised to allow this child be cared for at home. We are very sorry that this took so long. I presume this is from the HSE, is it? No, it is from...
is this...
And that, you know, I suppose... Is that relevant to Danny or Fia, Joe?
Yes, it is. Yeah, sorry. This is relevant to Orla, to Fia. This is from, it's just on a blank sheet, so I don't know who it's actually coming from, but it says, HSE response, a comprehensive package of care has been finalised to allow this child be cared for at home. We are very sorry that this took so long. Ends is the next thing. So
is this an email that you've just received?
Yeah, it's just been handed to me from upstairs, so that's...
Okay.
And as I said, when I came down, I was conscious that people were on the phones for a few hours about this, so... That's the sentence, Orla. A comprehensive package of care has been finalised to allow this child to be cared for at home. So,
we will definitely need that email and follow that up, John.
Well, in fairness, now that it's on the public record, I'm sure, in fairness, and they do say we are very sorry that this took so long.
Oh, look, we've been speaking with the palliative care team in the southeast.
Okay.
The palliative care team in Crumlin, and we're all on the same side.
Yeah.
We just want this to be fixed, and unfortunately, we have been told to bring it publicly and politically to get Fia cared for.
Okay.
Because in the short term, they weren't sure that would actually happen. We were advised by the palliative care consultants to do this.
Okay, that's fine.
Then in the long term, just to get the palliative care team what they need to provide in the future without it ever needing to be
that's
a public issue.
And
I suppose, Joe, that was just a misconception as well around the time that we secured the bespoke package for Danny. It's absolutely wonderful, and I'm so relieved for the lads that that's a place for Fia. But I suppose the reality of the situation is it shouldn't be a case-by-case basis. It's not a right to have the choice for your child to die at home after what these kids endure.
Yeah.
The grueling treatment, they've already missed out so much. And it's not just the kids, it's siblings, parents, extended family. And it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
But I suppose there's two issues going on here. You know, there needs to be a paediatric palliative care consultant put in place in the southeast.
Okay.
And also the training needs to be put in place for the community palliative care team, that they feel equipped to look after paediatric patients appropriately in their own homes. So, I mean, this has gone on since 2017.
Yeah.
This is not I agree the staff. It shouldn't happen again. It's completely wrong.
And Lisa, I'm even asking this question because the reality is that Danny, 7 years of age, has passed in December, relatively recently. But can I ask, what did palliative care, home palliative care, consist of when you campaigned and got it?
Well, we were very, very lucky. I suppose Danny's team from his local hospital, Tipperary University Hospital, they were willing to put together a package where the nurses who actually worked and looked after Danny since he was diagnosed came to our home and looked after him.
Right.
Now, they weren't palliative trained nurses, but they were pediatric nurses and they knew Danny so well. So they were so committed to Danny's care and our care as a family that they took that on board to do that. Obviously with the support of the HSE at the very end, but we're willing to do it in a voluntary capacity if necessary.
Well, that's incredible.
So I suppose in terms of our family, the difference it made was that Danny has two older brothers, a wide circle of friends, cousins, grandparents. We didn't have to sit in Crumlin or they didn't have to be in the room or out of the room. They could be at home in the sitting room. We put up the Christmas tree. They watched television. They watched movies. If they were able to be with him, they could. If Danny needed to rest, he could. But he was part of things and very much had choices and dictated his final days as much as he was able to.
As you say, that 7-year-old child and now 4-year-old child, but for Danny, as you say, he didn't like hospitals, like a lot of us, obviously, even though they're brilliant.
No, and that was very clearly and articulately expressed by Danny up to the very end of
was
the hospital treatment. Yeah.
Oh, God. And he was 7, so he had some sense, did he, of how unwell he was?
Absolutely. He knew that he wasn't going to be having any more treatments and that it wasn't, the medicine wasn't working anymore. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, God, what a young man.
Yeah.
What a young man.
But it's wonderful that he and her family have now got, but the fact that they had to come and do this at such an emotional time,
But Lisa, what's wonderful as well is that in your minute by minute, second by second grieving for your son, that you could speak out publicly as well at this stage to support all his extended family, Fia's parents and all of her aunt. That's an incredible.
I think Laura and Rory would feel as strongly as myself and my husband that hopefully we're the last families that will have to do this.
Okay, that is a very strong point you want to make. That issue needs to be addressed as soon as possible. God rest Danny, Lisa.
Thank you, Joe.
And may he rest in peace. As you say, all his family were with him. And when you say December, it was early in December when he passed.
The 9th of December.
Every strength and support coming in, and you can hear it there from Lisa, which I think is an extraordinary contribution for a family in that pain to speak publicly. And I know, and Lisa would say it's the least we could do, but given what Lisa and her family have gone through, it's incredible. So our love to Fia and Paddy and the parents, obviously Laura and Rory, and all the extended family, and above all, safe travelling to the palliative care team as they visit every single day, and safe travelling to Fia. Lisa, thanks indeed, Lisa, and condolences again.
And, thank you, Joe. Can I just
quickly
just specify before we actually get off the phone, because that's the first positive response we've actually received, and we just want to make sure that we actually get that contact. Yeah. Because although one sentence confirming care, hopefully that will be reality, but we're still stuck in a scenario of getting the right names, the right contacts.
Yeah, okay.
Of how to get it properly organised in the South East, because from our point of view, we've been speaking to the palliative care and they haven't offered that. So I just don't know who that contact is.
Yeah,
I just wanted to get that specific thing from you.
I have a name at the bottom, but I won't. In fairness, it's just a Christian name.
It's
a fairly unusual name. So, but it is. It says hello, HSE response. A comprehensive package of care has been finalised to allow this child be cared for at home. We are very sorry that took so long. Regards and then person, and I think in fairness, I think the reason that it reads like a telegram is that they wanted to get the news to you as quick as possible. That'll be dealt with upstairs. Kind regards again, and
thank you so much.
And Lisa as well, our condolences. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Lynn MacDonald. Lynn, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And your situation is a difficult one as well, Lynn.
Yeah, it is. And I have so much sympathy for Fia's parents.
Yeah.
And condolences to Danny's parents also. Joe, I rang in. I felt it necessary to give you a call. It's not just the Southeast.
Okay.
There is zero palliative care for children who are actively dying at home in Ireland. Other than Our Lady's Hospice here in Dublin beside us, which is an adult service, there is nothing. Your GP, we have an incredible GP, and I can't sing Dr. Sarah Hennessy's praises anymore. She has gone above and beyond for us. But on Friday afternoon until Monday morning, if Daisy gets into difficulty, that's it. There is nobody to call on other than a locum doctor who they take one look and say, take Daisy in. That's not what we want for her. Daisy came home on the 15th of January 2020 after being given 24 hours. After 16 weeks of battling intensively with fundraised palliative nursing 24/7 around the clock, Daisy pulled through. And we have had five of those life-threatening episodes where it has been touch and go minute by minute. And we have been left to our own devices. We do have access to palliative care in Crumlin, but it's a phone call between a community liaison and they can offer advice on pain management, but there is nobody to come to the home and support us. I have a team of incredible nurses who have been with us long term.
Okay.
They started off with Jack and Jill, and thankfully they signed over to the main agency, Nurse On Call. At the moment, the HSE are trying to pull that agency from us. So a child who is at end-of-life care, the HSE deem it necessary to uproot the only support network that children have because they're no longer on the national framework. Yeah. I have nurses connected to us who would sleep on our sofa after doing 48 hours not to leave me on my own when Daisy gets to the point where she could leave at any stage. They are an incredible support to us, especially one nurse, Eileen. Eileen has literally done everything and anything and brought us into the bosom of her home also. I'm a single parent, three children, and all I've ever wanted is to give my little girl the best quality of life possible for as long as she's allowed to stay with me. And to have to fight a system that is fractured from the bottom up on a daily basis has pushed me personally to the edge. I contemplated taking my life. I CPA'd a house every Monday because of the system that does not work. And it is, as I said, it's national. This is a problem in every county, in every home. And it's not good enough anymore.
And what palliative care, home palliative care, do you have for Daisy?
So we have a home care package. Okay. It has been a combination of two agencies. Nurse On Call would be five nights and five mornings. And Bluebird is two nights and two mornings. They don't all get filled. There's still an eight-hour break in between those two shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 hours on your own with a child who's on 20 litres of oxygen requiring deep suctioning, who turns blue when you try to take her mask off. Daisy's on a ventilator. She requires bell washouts because her bells no longer work. Okay. She has very little access. So even if we brought her into hospital, getting access through her portacat is really, really difficult. She has epilepsy, so she can have multiple seizures in a day. Mm-hmm. She's nonverbal. She's wholly incapacitated. If she's not handled properly, she has osteoporosis, so brittle bone, and we break legs from trying to manipulate Daisy to help with her bowels. And there is nobody to fall back on when it gets bad. We're told, bring her in. And we've literally 3 days ago taken Daisy out of hospital. For the first time in 15 months, I managed Daisy for 15 whole months at home without any hospital intervention. And it's been the happiest time that we've had as a family. I have a 14-year-old who suffers severe separation anxiety.
Yeah.
Because most of her life has been being bounced from pillar to post. While I'm lying in a hospital ground bed with Daisy. It's so, so hard. It's so hard, Joe.
And
I'm on my way now to Laura Lynn to visit Daisy, and Laura Lynn is an absolutely incredible service.
Yeah.
And I admire them for what they do, but it's not adequate. You know, it's on average 15 nights a year. There is help there, but it's not end-of-life care, which when your child is actively dying, that's what you need.
And is Daisy, you took her home from hospital. Obviously,
I took her home originally in January. We did the Bumbleins Angel trip. So the final trip where she earned her badges. That's how bad things were, Joe.
Yeah.
Daisy was completely unresponsive. We were told to wean her off the 20 litres of oxygen we had her on and to gradually stop fluids and feeds. And I couldn't do it. I actually couldn't do that to my child. And I fought for her. And the way I see it is, until Daisy stops fighting, I'll continue to do that. Whether the HSE support us or not, I'll continue to do that. But it's backbreaking work and it's soul-destroying. And it is something that no parent should ever have to battle through, especially when you feel so unsupported by the state and by the system.
So, for example, Lynn, what's the plan this weekend for Daisy? Would you still?
So I'm heading to Laura Lynn now in a minute. I'm going to spend the afternoon. I'm outside my parents' house at the moment. And bringing them over to visit, and then I'll be back with her again tomorrow, back with her again on Sunday, and Monday she comes home. Monday, Eileen, my incredible angel nurse, will help me transfer Daisy home, and just back to the grindstone, and do whatever I can to try and keep her happy and comfortable. We have a Facebook page, Joe,
and
The support that comes through Daisy's days is absolutely exceptional, and I feel extremely blessed to know that the public are behind kids like Daisy.
We get some
negative feedback. We get some really nasty stuff that goes on, but that comes with social media. But when we have needed help, we've been able to turn to the public to help us. When I've needed it from the HSE, I have literally begged and begged and gotten very, very not gotten very far.
And where is the deficit on Monday that the HSE should try and address in terms of home care?
Eileen will finish at 2 o'clock and
In the afternoon.
And then it's myself, my newborn and my 14-year-old.
Okay.
And we'll have a nurse come in that night then and help out. But it takes two people at all times
Daisy. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
If she becomes rapidly unwell and she's not fully recovered from when we were in hospital, she had massive bleeds rectally. That's something I couldn't manage at home. On a month-to-month basis, Daisy is on 1 to 2 courses of antibiotics and steroids to try and just get over the worst of a continuous underlying condition that she has. Her lungs don't clear of the infection. It just resurfaces constantly. Monday is hard because not only do you have the one-on-one care, and it's an ICU setup we have at home. Okay. We have ventilators, we have suction machines, we have two feeding pumps, we have an air mattress, we have an electric bed, we have a day bed that's electric also, she has saturation monitor. Yeah. You know, it's a big setup, and I am not trained medically, but at this point, after 10 years of experience with Daisy, I could do any ICU job at this rate. And I'm not recognised as a carer in the country. You know, we're not. 20 billion we save the state, and they do not treat us the way that we deserve to be treated.
And I presume at some stage HSE have said that Daisy needs so much care that they'd argue that she's... Well, sorry, would they argue that she's better... given her needs, she would be better in a setup, an ICU actual setup in a hospital.
The thing is, there's no more treatment for Daisy Jo. Okay. So when we bring her in, okay, and we take her to ICU, Daisy becomes flat. She gives up very easy when we're in that environment. And she loses her spark. You know, kids aren't allowed to go in and visit. She's no visitors coming in. It's just me and her against, you know, whatever battle she's fighting at the time. That's not life. Yeah. And the year before last, she did 33 weeks in intensive care. You know, and the fact that she's pulled through, that tells me that she still has the will to live.
Yeah.
So until she stops, I'll just keep going. But the whole system has to change.
Lynn, have you time to stay with us? Because I want you, if you can, listen to Aisling Nibbs, who spoke to us before about the situation. Aisling, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're in Donegal.
Good afternoon to Lynn, who I also know very well.
Aww. Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, go ahead, Aisling.
I'm just ringing, Joe, because I heard Fia's aunt speaking earlier on, and I'm just so saddened and so dismayed that since my son Oren passed away 6 years ago, when I was in the exact same position as Fia's parents are now, that nothing has changed and nothing has improved, despite a huge fight on my part against the HSE to change their policy in relation to paediatric palliative care.
And you fought to get Oren
home to die.
And how did you get on?
Well, Joe, Oren had a progressive genetic disease called mitochondrial disease, and he was sick all of his 7.5 years, even though he was a very, very happy little boy. But when it came to the time that Oren was in intensive care in Temple Street for the last several weeks of his life, I made it very clear when I realised that he had no more energy left to fight that I wanted to bring him home to pass away. And it was made very clear to me that we could bring him home, but if we did that, it would be without any nursing or medical support.
Good, yeah.
Now, it just astounded me at the time, Joe, that, and I did discuss this with you at the time, only quite recently after Oren had passed away, that I found it remarkable that we have hospices in almost every county in Ireland, certainly in every province, to allow a person to either die within a hospice building or in their own home with nursing care provided.
Yeah.
And we cannot do that in 2023 for our children.
And given, obviously, with the circle of life, children needing that home palliative care as a number would be much less than adults.
And Joe, I can't express. I know the position that Fia's parents are in. I know the position that Lynn is in. There's nothing worse in this life than losing your child.
Of course.
And making that more difficult and more upsetting for a family at the worst time in their lives when their whole world is collapsing around them. It's criminal. I had to spend the last hours of Oren's life on this earth fighting to get him home to Donegal, and the only option I was being given was that he could pass away in a medical environment, clinical environment in Temple Street. Mind you, they do wonderful work.
Yes.
I couldn't fault them. Or in Laura Lynn Children's Hospice, which we also stayed in and found wonderful. But with no offence to either of them, Joe, that wasn't Oren's home.
Yeah, yeah.
Oren lived in Donegal. He deserved to die with me and his father and his brother and sister around him, which is what I eventually did get. But I might add that the only reason that we achieved that was down to the good nature and the kindness of nurses within Letterkenny General Hospital that offered their services to come out to our home and sit with him while he was on a ventilator and a morphine driver.
And then when you hear...
And nothing has changed. This just sickens me. You know, why do those in the HSE expect parents to manage children who are in an ICU environment at home with no support? Number one, that's their right. And number two, if their parents want that, if that's their choice, then they should be facilitated in that choice.
And as you say, the horror of what you're going through and the prospect of what parents are going through, and then this extra...
I can't put it into words, Joe. Yeah. The unnecessary stress and upset that it causes. You're already facing your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Even if, as in my case and in Lynn's, you have prepared for that and you know that it's coming, it doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah.
You just want to do what's right for your child, and to allow my son to die at home in his own bed with me and his father beside him and his brother and sister, I think that was the very least we could do, having put up a fight for 7.5 years. And why is that afforded to adults and not children?
Yeah.
I mean, people are actually astounded when I tell them that.
As I am, and as I think listeners are, because there is no response to that. And okay, I see.
And I actually asked for this to be investigated by the HSE after Oren passed away. And I was told that there would be extra supports put into place and this scenario would never happen again. As shocking as it seems, Joe, a very dear friend of mine lost her little boy 6 months before Oren.
Okay.
In this region also. And I know firsthand that this is what happened, because I was actually there in the house. She brought her 5-year-old son home to die on a morphine driver. And she was told that there was no nurse available to administer it. And she was being asked to administer that morphine driver herself. She's not a medic. She's not a nurse.
Of course.
She was a mother losing her child. And if something had gone wrong in that scenario, she would be held accountable for that.
The scenario is unimaginable, as you say, but something to add to that is just... it's to add an enormous burden onto an unbearable burden. Lynn, how did you manage during COVID, for example? How did Daisy manage?
Very difficult. We didn't leave our home. I took Ellie out of school. I homeschooled her myself for 2 full years. Nobody in, nobody out. That's what we did for 2 years.
Wow.
Very, very difficult. And with Daisy, like, you're up during the night as well.
Yeah.
So I set up the room. So I slept in bed with Daisy.
Yeah.
And then trying to just manage. I had a wonderful friend who was a school principal at the time. He gave us one of his resource teachers to help Ellie with her Irish and
Brilliant.
A couple of her difficult subjects online. And that's how we managed. But Joe, one other thing that nobody's mentioned yet today either is, on top of the lack of support, the in loco parentis rule that was brought in, and actually Aisling and Oren were one of the first families to be hit by this in Donegal. That's where it first rolled out, and Aisling, along with myself, campaigned tirelessly to have it overturned. That is now called the Parental Absence Agreement Form, and it is impossible to get that finalised. We're over a year trying to get 1 hour during the day where I can get a break. 1 hour, Joe. It's actually too much. And listening to my lovely friend Aisling there, you know, it breaks my heart, because her little ray of sunshine was a friend of Daisy's also. It's a very small knit community we have across the country. It's hard. It's hard because we're watching each other suffering.
Thanks, Lynn. You've done so much and are doing so much, and your family, and God's strength.
Not finished, Joe.
I know. God's strength.
I have a long way to go still, when my time becomes mine again, I will work even harder to ensure that this doesn't happen to other families.
Well, God's,
that's Daisy's legacy.
Well, God's strength to Daisy for the time ahead.
Thank you, Joe.
Lynn, mind yourself, Lynn. Thanks indeed.
Take care.
Take care, and you take care of so many. Aisling, you take care as well, and you've taken care of so many, including people like Lynn as well, by sharing your story and Oran's legacy. Aisling Nibs in Donegal, thank you so much, Aisling, and God rest Oran. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Michael Stevenson wants to talk to us about the item at the start of the programme. Again, another difficult call for Robert to make, looking for anti-abuse tablets to keep him well, so to speak, or encourage him effectively to not to touch alcohol. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And your situation was, Michael, please?
Situation, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Tried different treatments out there, AA, and a couple of things, and they didn't work for me. Work for everybody.
Yeah.
And just wasn't my cup of tea. Searched the internet, found a surgeon, basically got an implant.
Okay.
That has taken all cravings away for drink.
Wow.
Every craving I have, got to that stage, like I was on basically a bottle of vodka a day. In the evening time only. In the evening time, I was a functional alcoholic. I worked during the day. I drank a bottle of vodka at night. I drank a litre bottle every day, every weekend. And more. And it's just taken everything away. Yes, I will get sick if I touch a drink, but not to the stage where these tablets will leave you needing medical help.
So, is this implant widely available?
It is now, yes. Yes, it's not really all that known about, but it is available, yes, it is available in Ireland.
Through medics?
Through medics, you go private.
And if you did, God forbid, take a drink with this implant?
You get violently sick. You can get convulsions. Yeah. You can black out. It's a deterrent.
Good
not to. But it has no question that it's taken every craving I had for drink off me.
But it actually takes the craving away.
Actually takes the craving away, the want. I can say that any alcoholic can know that horrible taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
And it has completely, probably not for everybody, the same as the other treatments are not for everybody, but from what I've heard on your show, the tablets seem to make you violently sick, that you need medical help. Now, I have spoken to a few people that had the same treatment.
And Robert also, in fairness, Robert told us, sorry, just to back up what you're saying, Michael. Robert said that that antibiotic doesn't take away the craving for alcohol. It's an addiction. But you're saying this implant, which is medically administered, actually takes away the craving.
Actually takes away the craving and the want, yes. Yes. There's no doubt about it. I'm surprised at myself. I went into it.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose you go into every treatment skeptical. Jeepers, now, can I recommend it? Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And when did you get the implant?
I got it 8 weeks ago.
Oh, 8 weeks ago, okay.
Yes.
And will you have to have that forever?
There's between a 10 to 12 month period of it. It's whatever it does, it releases something into your system, and it lasts for between 10 and 12 months. If you have the need or the feeling that you need to drink again, you can get it done again. There's no...
Oh, okay.
There's no time limit on getting it, or amount of times you can get it done. Yeah. But, like on Paddy's Day, I went into the pub, I drank 2 Cokes. I went out of there again, as happy as...
Okay.
But I could have been. It literally doesn't affect me now. From before that, I mean, the second I finished work, I wanted a drink. Before I finished work, I wanted a drink.
Yeah.
And I had one the second I finished work. I had one when I woke up in the mornings. So it has definitely...
And are there any side effects of this implant?
Not that I have had any, no. You go through your normal, what I would say, your normal week of detox. Mm-hmm. And after that, there is certainly, as I say, I've gone through detox before. I've gone through it this time. It was the same thing. But after that, it just seems to be like I never took a drink. I know that sounds weird, but it's true.
And as I say, if people look it up, it is there. And you can't get it without obviously going through the medical system. But
no,
it is there. The implant is mentioned there, yeah.
It is there. It is there. It's on the internet for anybody to see. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All information, everything is there for anybody.
Okay. Well, Michael, well done. And one day at a time. And
that's just it. I mean, you just take it as a ride as well. But it certainly is something. It's another option out there for people like myself.
But did the drink not tell you, Michael? Because it is such a devious master.
Of course it did. Of course it did.
Did the drink not tell you almost up to the day you got the implant? Don't get the implant.
Of course it's a major pull, and it'll probably do everything to stop you. But when the implant was mentioned to me, I immediately said yes. Drying out was mentioned to me. It wasn't for me. Being signed in was mentioned to me, which probably made me more inclined to go for the implant, but I did immediately say yes, and I had it done within 2 weeks.
Okay. Michael, thanks so much for that contribution, Michael, and that glimpse.
No problem.
I don't think that's I know it won't work for everybody, or people can find AA so important.
Of course they can, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Okay, yep. Michael, stay well, and safe travelling. That's Michael Stevenson
right,
in Longford. Thanks, Michael.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
To finish on something that's been raised with us on a number of occasions this week when we were talking about maths, and how useful it was in our day-to-day life, from putting up bunting to building your own garden shed. That was Pythagoras' theorem. Jeff Fitzpatrick, Jeff, you are into sacred geometry.
That's right, Joe. How you doing? Nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, I have this passion for this discipline called sacred geometry, which is essentially just a way of looking at the world where you see kind of lovely patterns of order in everything around us, you know.
Okay.
So everything from as simple as a daisy, most flowers actually adopt simple shapes like five-pointed stars, triangles, lilies of 6 petals, you know, and I've been enjoying this journey for about 20 years, and I've kind of just uncovered many, many findings that have kind of resulted in me having this beautiful sense that we live in this kind of interconnected universe, you know, that we're part of something much greater, and it makes you feel good.
And a number of people pointed out to us yesterday in the Irish Times there was a house for sale. And can you describe this? This is a house that is built on, is it on sacred geometrical patron, so to speak.
That's right. I actually was in that house. Yeah, it was built by a friend of mine called Michael Rice.
Okay.
And he's like a very established architect.
Okay.
And he integrates sacred geometric principles into buildings, you know, so his point of view would be if you surround yourself with these principles, that you kind of begin to almost come into harmony with them. And if you are coming into harmony, they're just like natural principles that make up the world around us, you know. So he built this beautiful house called Dreamfields based on all of these principles.
And looking at the photograph, which we'll tweet now, but from the Irish Times, it's circles within circles, it's beautiful curves.
He's integrated things like the golden ratio would be like one of the most central motifs in sacred geometry.
Remind us what the golden ratio is, because it is important, isn't it?
Yeah, the golden ratio is like kind of this very special proportioning system, which basically accounts for nearly everything that we see. So you know the way I was going on about a daisy there?
Yeah.
If you overlay a simple five-pointed star over a daisy, the five-pointed star just expresses this beautiful relationship of 1 to 1.618. I won't mention numbers because it gets really boring. But basically, everybody knows what a daisy is. Everybody knows what a five-pointed star is. And that actually goes all the way down to our DNA. It also goes all the way up to the pattern that the planet Venus draws around us every 8 years. She draws this gorgeous five-pointed star, 99.9% accurate. When you look at the mean orbits of Venus and Earth.
Can people look up, they can, I presume, they can Google, you Google sacred geometry.
We've got a website, sacredgeometryacademy.com.
Okay, is
a good place to go to.
Brilliant. Professor, or Emeritus Professor Des McHale, no discussion on maths and trying to make it more accessible to people is complete without Des. Des, what is the Fibonacci sequence, which apparently this house
I couldn't agree more with your previous speaker, because, I mean, the universe is absolutely geometric. And, I mean, we forget that, you know, the orbit of the Earth around the sun is an ellipse. You get these spirals in the stars. But a lot of it is based on the Fibonacci sequence. And it's just a sequence of positive numbers starting out 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, where any term is the sum of the two previous terms. And a lot of geometry and a lot of nature is actually based on that. A snail's shell, for example, will fit inside a rectangle of that type. And there's even a special Fibonacci journal to talk about all these things, you know, to make them popular with people, because it just occurs all over the place. And it's a pity, really, that people learn geometry in school, but they don't see the geometry in the universe around about them, the harmony, the beauty, the precision of it is absolutely marvelous. And it's a pity that people don't really look at these aspects of mathematics and enjoy them a lot more, I think.
And do you see that beauty that Jeff spoke about, the geometrical beauty in life?
Absolutely, nature. Everywhere. I ask people as they walk around the city, just look at the number of squares, the number of rectangles, the number of circles, the number of ellipses, and you'll see that all the architecture and all the buildings around about us are based on geometric principles. Even just the number of right angles you can see if you look around you, or the number of ellipses you can see, is a good manifestation of what this is all about. And there are just so many shapes in nature, you know, even down to the microscopic level, our cells and stuff. They are geometric shapes. Look at what the bees do. The bees make perfect hexagons, you know, and most people look at that and say, how on earth do they know that that's the best and the most economical way of storing your honey?
Okay, well, it's great to hear your voice, Des, again.
To hear you too.
You're a great fan.
I'm actually sitting here in beautiful Clonakilty Bay in West Cork at the moment.
The sun
is shining, and I'm looking out at the shell duck, and there's warm spring sunshine, and it's absolutely blissful.
And it's beautifully geometric and symmetrical as well.
Des, all over the place.
Guru Mila Mahaka, Des, great to hear you. Jeff Fitzpatrick, you've given people something to do, including myself, for the weekend. Look up Sacred Geometry Academy. Okay, thanks, Jeff. Great to hear from Mark McGrath.
Thank you. Slums. Lovely speaking, Joe.
Likewise. Jeff. Jeff has a lovely voice as well. Beautifully rounded voice. Mark McGrath, BCO. Shane Galvin, producer. Sean O'Gorman is the producer today. The series producer is Annette Egan. Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m.